40 years after the fall of government-sanctioned segregation, race is still a thorny topic in the U.S., a subject that Americans often approach with trepidation to avoid a minefield of potential slights or hurt feelings. But in the world of stand-up comedy, the subject of race is not so much a minefield as a gold mine, an endless source of great material. That's because comedy provides a comfort zone to discuss uncomfortable topics. It's a place where audiences can laugh at themselves and look past pain to acknowledge unvarnished truth. Over the next 3 days, we will hear from three different comedians who've experienced success and some measure of controversy because of their brutally honest discussions of race in America. Today, we begin with Margaret Cho, the daughter of Korean immigrants, who decided early on that she wanted to work in show business.
I do enjoy being a comedian. I've been a comic for a long time. I always wanted to do this ever since I was a kid, but I never saw Asian people on television or in movies, so my dreams were somewhat limited. I would dream, maybe someday I could be an extra on MASH.
Then there was Kung Fu. But that doesn't really count because David Carradine, the star of Kung Fu, was not Chinese. So that show should not have been called Kung Fu. It should have been called, hey, that guy's not Chinese.
Cho had her own television sitcom in 1994, but it was canceled after a brief run, in part because the network said she was not Asian enough. She has taken the pain from that experience and her take on life as the perpetual outsider and channeled it into national comedy tours and two concert films. We recently sat down with Margaret Cho in her suburban Los Angeles home. After all the touring and hotel rooms, Cho, who's now 34, has created a lush retreat with overstuffed sofas, jewel-toned walls, and life-size Buddha statues in several rooms. She describes herself as a homebody and is spending her days working on her next show, which she plans to take on the road early next year. This time, she looks at the questions of race, questions she endures, and questions she struggles to answer herself.
It's questions. It's like almost like the interactions that are racially motivated. Like when people say, where are you from? It's a really loaded question because when I answer, oh, I'm from San Francisco, they always come back with, where are you really from? And then I have to say, well, my parents are originally from Korea. And then I have to listen to all the stories about the Korean people they know or Korean food that they ate before or Korean words they're not sure they're pronouncing correctly, and I don't care, but for some reason they have to tell me. I just don't get it. Like, I don't go up to white people and go, hey, are you from France? I mean, like, not recently, but a couple of hundred years ago, I thought so. I love your fries. You know, it's like a weird thing that we never do, and I know people are just trying to be nice to me, but I don't know, like, what to do with that, because to me it seems like when they're saying, where you're from, it doesn't sound like where you're from, it sounds like, oh, you don't belong here. Where do you belong? Like they're trying to place me.
And people who ask those questions certainly wouldn't see themselves as racist.
No, they would never, because they're just trying to be nice. And I'm not saying that they are racist either. I'm just saying that the interaction is uncomfortable and this is why.
It's sort of like saying that a black person is articulate.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I think Chris Rock said it. Like people say that Colin Powell is well-spoken. Like that's a compliment. What do you mean well-spoken?
He's the Secretary of State.
I know, he speaks well. He speaks. It's like, why is that a compliment? You would never say that certain people are well-spoken. I mean, it's like such a weird thing. Like, it's somehow an achievement.
And so by raising that on stage, you can educate people in a comfortable place,
mm-hmm.
in a comfortable space.
Yeah, and also, people that know that experience appreciate the seeing of it, you know, in a kind of an artistic framework. You know,
so it's like calling people out without wagging your finger at them.
Yeah, because it's not like I'm trying to blame anyone, because it's not a negative thing necessarily that they're doing, or they don't know that it's negative. It's just that the way that we experience race in our culture is so odd. And so to kind of point out the reasons why is hopefully my job.
I deal with something racial every day. Something every day. I was walking down the street and I walk past this guy and he goes, "Me so horny." Every day, it's something. I was skiing in Deer Valley and there's no people of color up there. And I'm up there skiing and I have an instructor and he goes, "Hey, don't take this the wrong way, but you have a tendency to bow into your skis."
Do you think that Americans have been sensitized in some way to dealing with race when it comes to certainly African Americans, more and more to Latino Americans? There are things that people won't say because they know from experience that this is offensive. Because there are lots of African-American politicians, comedians, social activists who have sort of laid the ground rules.
Right.
Do you feel like that there hasn't been enough work to lay the ground rules to let people know exactly what is offensive to Asian Americans?
Oh, yeah, because there's nobody actually expressing it. I mean, there's not enough. You know, I think there needs to be more of a collective effort to create that consciousness. You know, and that's a hard thing because you're kind of going against maybe what Asian culture is about in a lot of ways. I mean, all of the Asian cultures are different, but they have certain things that there's a common ground in this. There's not like this desire to sort of save face in certain issues. And that I think transcends, you know, the fact that we live here and are Americanized. There are certain things that, you know, my culture holds on to, you know, Korean culture holds on to these things like don't make waves or don't cause a fuss or don't, you know, because if you argue about something being racist, it's embarrassing because it sort of implies that you were offended. And to be offended is kind of a bad idea because it means that you are vulnerable to something, you know, or that you care somewhere.
Well, so, boy, I mean, that makes social activism very difficult. I mean,
yeah, it can be. But at the same time, I'm also hopefully talking to younger people who are very, very into being more Americanized and very into standing up for the rights and fighting that idea. You know, I mean, it's not something that is permanent, and it can be turned around.
Are you concerned that if you focus too much on race or on your Asian-ness, that you will be categorized as an Asian comic as opposed to a comic?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be categorized as that anyway. And it's weird to be categorized as an Asian comic because I'm kind of like the only one in the file. You know, there's not like a big, bulging manila folder filled with like Hongs and Tanakas, you know, it's like, it's just, there's only one slim Cho.
Once upon a time, I had my own TV show called All American Girl. When you're on television, you become a kind of community property, and people say whatever they want about you, and because I'm a woman, a lot of people said that I was ugly and that I was fat. And then there was the Asian American aspect, that there had never been a star, an Asian American star of a sitcom before, and this was really discussed everywhere. I opened up my newspaper at home to the editorial section, and they had printed a letter from a little Korean girl named Karen Kim, 12 years old, who wrote in saying, "When I see Margaret Cho on television, I feel deep shame." Why? Why? I guess this was because they'd never seen a Korean-American role model like me before. You know, I didn't play violin.
When the series was on the air, some of the toughest criticism came from Asian Americans. Was that particularly painful for you?
No, I think it was just super like annoying because you would think that there would be like a really supportive community there, but at the same time, I think that maybe what they were protesting was my lack of authenticity in terms of like authenticity in that Asian American culture has to be quote unquote authentic, because I think the idea of authenticity is a racist one in that it implies that there's only one true way to be Asian, or there's only one true story of Asian America. You know, to me, my argument to that is like the culture is so many different things that why can't I just tell my story, or why can't I just tell a story? You know, anybody who is somewhat outside the mainstream or set apart, they're going to have very particular concerns and ideas about how they're represented because there are so few images.
And because there are so few images, you get cases like the little girl who wrote the letter. I guess it was in the San Francisco paper.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing too, because it's like, you know, to me, it's like, what does that shame exactly come from? Is that because I'm so bad, or is it out of self-hatred? You know, what is that about? You know, it's like I have to like look deeper than the words sometimes to see what the person's actually saying. I mean, I think race and the issues of race are so complicated, and you know, I could talk about them forever. I mean, it's like my job is to try to find a way to make them funny and entertaining and interesting, and it's taken me this long to figure out what it all is about and what it all means.
I went on a promotional tour for the TV show, and I went all over the country, and I went to one morning show, and the announcer said, "Hey, Margaret, we're changing over to an ABC affiliate, so why don't you tell our viewers in your native language we're making that transition?" So I looked at the camera, and I said, "They're changing to an ABC affiliate."
How do you know if the message got across? Does the laughter carry a certain timbre?
Yeah.
Can you tell the difference between nervous laughter and, you know, laughter that really comes from the gut?
Yeah, there's a huge difference. I mean, it's not even in, like, volume or, like, even people. There's just, like, a sense of, you know, comfort that, like, almost like cathartic release. You know, it's a very different experience. I don't like nervous laughter. I think it's weird because first it's nervous laughter and then it's silence. And then it's people chair scraping and then the door slamming. It's not a good thing to have nervous laughter. You want people to be really like having a kind of catharsis. I think that's what people go to comedy for.
So do you warm people up or do you, I guess I don't get that. I mean, you basically come out, boom, you hit them right away.
You know, people kind of know. I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything to warm up.
Pull no punches.
No, I mean, why? You know, I already have their money.
Margaret Cho, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.